This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
What's happening, everybody? It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up on today's program, the Professor John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock. He's out there in Miami for the Super Bowl, as well as Joe Fan from NBC Sports Northwest is out there as well. He'll join us at 4:30, so we'll talk some football with him. He wrote a piece about a conversation he had with Shaquille Griffin and a new term that Dave Wyman is embracing with both arms. Is really excited about a new term that's being thrown. Are there any new terms that could come into football that you would say, I get it, or do you just want to say, you know what, there's already a term for that. It's unnecessary. Is that how you feel about most of these?
Yeah, they're not super necessary. They're unnecessary.
There's already a term for it, so just leave it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to talk to Joe, and Joe did put in quotes, travel.
Yes. Is today the first time you've heard that?
No.
Oh, you've heard it before?
I think I've heard it other places. Okay. But I just like, okay, it's going to spread through the media like wildfire. Like the flu, more like.
Like single high safety.
Yeah, like single high safety did. But yeah, that's and that is in reference to Shaquille Griffin just locking up a receiver and going wherever he goes. Kind of like Davante Adams that everybody talked about in that playoff game. So, and it was Shaquille himself that said travel. So we'll give Joe Fan a break on that. Now, Joe does a great job, and that's something interesting to look forward to, and also his interactions with Luke Wilson. But yeah, that was kind of something that came out of the end. There's always some story that comes out, and you know, and again, I mean, at the end of the season, when things like that, you know, happen, like they didn't cover Davante Adams, you know, that becomes like everybody thinks about the entire season in that regard. And the same thing, Trey Flowers is suffering from the same, you know, people looking through the view of or the lens of how he played in those last two games.
Yeah, it's recency bias. It's you're a prisoner of the moment.
Yeah. So, you know, I just think, but, you know, that did come up, and I think it'll be interesting talking to Joe about it. But yeah, that was one that I think everybody's looking for. I think Condota put it the best when we were talking to him about single high safety. He goes, yeah, you know, you want to be in the club of media guys that know what they're talking about when it comes to, you know, football terms and using fancy terms and whatnot.
Do you think media guys, by and large, understand how players and former players view them when they use those? You know, when you're running a skinny post and you've got the safety and coverage and they're throwing out all their terminology, more often than not, I'll watch the reaction of the player or former player, and there's either a jaw-breaking yawn going on or an eye roll. And it seems lost on that person who's asking that question.
Yeah.
They feel like they're dazzling them with their terminology, yet they're not really paying attention to the response from the person they're talking to or the person that's around them that's played the game.
Right.
I feel they seem just blissfully unaware.
Well, I mean, look, it's not like it's some it's not rocket science and like people can't figure that out. It's just I guess it can be a little bit annoying. And the reason why for me is because, yeah, you can sit there and say, okay, this is cover two or that's two man. The thing you don't know are what are the rules, you know, and even I don't know because I'm not in the meetings. We're all not in the meetings, so we don't really know what's going on. But no, I'm just mostly joking about that stuff. But the other one, and you hear players saying this now, guard.
Yeah.
Guard instead of cover.
It should just be basketball.
Yeah,
that's one that's bothered me, and I didn't play football, but when they're saying, yeah, I was guarding this guy, I'm like, that doesn't sound right. That's right. A basketball term, man.
Well, like I always say, and would tell Danny, and he would do it on purpose to annoy me, much like you do, Bob, with single-eye safety. But, you know, I would always say they're not called guardages. They're called coverages because you cover them. You guard in basketball. But I've heard, like, Tyler Lockett say it, so
yeah
but I don't know. It's just a different way of talking about things, so yeah, it's fine. It's fine, but it will annoy me just for a while.
Jim's over here smiling, going, oh, boy, I've got more ammunition now. Look at him.
Well, I heard KJ Wright yesterday with G and Ursula on their new show on Cairo FM, and I thought of you because he was talking about – KJ was saying, yeah, you know, I hear guys in the media talking about so-and-so getting beat on coverage, and they really don't know what – he didn't say they don't know what they're talking about, but he kind of, you know, inferred that.
He's right.
Because it's, you know, so many times he'll see a play and, you know, somebody will say something about it and they'll be way off base.
Yeah. Well, I used to go through that as a player. I'm like, I'd read an article. What? That's not – that wasn't my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, and you bring up when you and I sat in the sports pit and went through that one play – It's incredibly easy to look at a guy trailing a player who caught the ball and going, he got beat. He's running. Yeah. Look at he's running behind him. It's or he ran right by that person. But, you know,
he might be making up for someone else whose responsibility it was supposed to be.
Well, and we've got the luxury, and I'm not pandering to you, Dave, but of a guy that played the game that understands and goes, no, see what happened here is this is his responsibility. And this is probably where this guy should have come over. And that was his man. But, you know, he's trying to make a tackle now because somebody else didn't do their job.
Well,
and I think when we just sit at home and watch a game on TV, we just look at the guy trailing and go, yeah, guy got beat, you know? So you're right. It's not rocket science, but there are rules within their defense that don't, it doesn't always show itself on screen unless you've got somebody like you that's played the game or somebody that's, you know, that's involved with the game that can go, no, here's what you're missing is here's what happened here. This guy got pushed here, whatever happened. And a lot of it's very subtle that you don't catch.
Yeah. Well, and I would say I probably, because of that, know more about how much I don't know. You know, and I heard a guy say that one time. He's like, sometimes being smart is knowing when you don't know. So, I mean, look, you can come up with a couple of different scenarios. Well, maybe this guy had it, maybe that guy had it. If you want to sit and grind over the play, you can probably figure it out. But you're not really going to know until, because there was a lot of rules based on formations and motion and things change. And then you have like little specialties like, hey, listen, if they're in this formation and we're playing zone and this guy comes all the way across the field, you got to pick him up man to man. So, I mean, there's lots of little things to remember. And so, KJ, I've sort of felt his frustration. And so that's why I don't point fingers. And a lot of times, even when I do the football 101 thing down there, I'll say, well, this linebacker did this and this linebacker did that because here's what I think, but I don't really know. And I won't name names just because for that reason. But yeah, it's fine. Everybody's out there just trying to do a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to explain it. I just think that the best explanation to people is the simplest one. And my brother used to always say that he's really smart, but he's always like, if you wanted directions from A to B, you would want it with the least words possible.
Yeah, make it easy.
Yeah, so I try to explain it, you know, in those terms. And sometimes people don't do it. Yeah, but when people try to dazzle with terms and things like that, that does kind of bother me because I feel like you're just trying to show everybody how smart you are. You're not trying to explain the game. You're just trying to show everybody that you know all these fancy terms. And a lot of them, maybe you don't even know. But yeah, that all is kind of a little frustration thing. But it's mostly tongue in cheek because I told Bob today that I was going to talk in third person and use both names if he uses travel or single high safety.
So yeah. It's going to be 3 hours of Dave Wyman thinks this, and then me asking him about traveling and single high safety coverages.
See, I know for a fact it's going to come up, though.
I'm not sure that I could even look myself in the mirror, though, after one segment of doing that.
But, when you go first and last name.
That's a gut punch.
That's a gut punch. All right. Well, we'll talk to Joe Fan. He did a nice piece on Shaq Griffin, so we'll talk about that at 4:30, the professor at 4 o'clock. But we're a few days away from the Super Bowl. There are certain people that catalog every moment. They have the ability to reflect on a game from 15 years ago. Man, remember the third quarter in that game between the Bills and the Giants? And I'm like, no, I don't.
Well, Danny and Dave are really good about that when it comes to the Seahawks.
Yeah, you guys are good at that. And I know Curtis can sit there and tell you. And I think Wassel's pretty good at that, at these moments in games. It leaves me. I can remember who won if they bring it up. Like, oh, remember the Titans and the Rams? Oh, yeah. I remember the play at the end. And I couldn't tell you every play that took place before that. I know the Rams won. I know it came down to the end and, you know, McNair and it completed a pass and it was just a shade away from the goal line and Mike Jones with the tackle, but that's where it ends.
Well, to be fair, I would say, Jim, and not probably you too, Bob, but working with you over the years about baseball, you know, you'd be like, yeah, it was a 3-2 pitch or whatever. And I'm like, what? How do you remember that? So I don't know. Maybe it's just the years of, you know, having gone through all the different things. But I think it's kind of interesting, you know, looking at these Super Bowls and just, and I think for most people, obviously, if you have, you know, a team like the Seahawks, you know, you hated Super Bowl 40. You really hated Super Bowl 49, and Super Bowl 48 was your favorite by far. And that was, and it wasn't even close. Like, that was the most comfortable win in Super Bowl history.
Yeah, probably. If I'm not a fan of either the Seahawks or the Broncos in that game, and I'm just watching the Super Bowl like this weekend where I'm not a fan of either team per se, I'd look at that game and go, that sucked.
Yeah.
That stunk, man. That wasn't a good game.
Well, unless you were a fan of defense, though. And you like, you got sick of hearing about Peyton Manning and the big year that he had, and if you like,
so you're coming from a Seahawk perspective there.
Well, not necessarily. I was trying to be more objective with it. I think there were some fans around the country that
thought that was an entertaining game.
Yeah, that probably, well, just like the storyline of how the game turned out, because all it was Peyton Manning.
Yeah, boy, it was
50 touchdown passes, and boy, the Seahawks, even though they have a good defense, they're not going to be able to shut him down. So if you still subscribe to the a good defense shuts down a good offense, that was a good game for you to watch.
If you've ever moved to Colorado as an outsider, I enjoyed it very much because I grew to hate the Broncos living in Colorado.
You grew to hate them.
Did you?
Yes.
Why?
Just
their
because
fans are and I've lived other places. I feel like people say this a lot, but I've lived in a lot of cities. I don't mind Seahawks fans. There's a lot of fans I don't mind, and the Bronco fans were exceptionally delusional and hard to talk to.
Maura, I just so appreciate that you are here.
Dave played there and he agrees with me.
Yeah, with that perspective. I mean, just from the standpoint of those fans would turn on you, and there was like a chain link fence behind our, and I think I told you the story where I took a swipe at a guy.
How close did you come?
I came close enough to knock his sunglasses off his face. And somebody up in the stands was like, come on, Wyman. You're better than that. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
No, I'm not. You've overestimated me. I'm not better than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, they would just turn on you. I mean, if you lost a game, we went to the playoffs one year and we lost, and it was terrible. We lost to Tampa Bay on, I believe it was either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And we lost to them, and it was a terrible loss. And, you know, we were still going to make it into the playoffs, and people were just a steady stream going past the bench calling us some of the worst names you can imagine. So, and I just never, like in 92, and I bring that season up a lot because it's significant, 2-14, I don't ever remember like boos or people screaming and yelling at us or anything like that.
By the way, our producer's name is Maura.
Why? What did I say?
No, somebody texts in and says, I can't tell if Linda is describing Broncos fans or Huskies fans.
Ooh.
That's Maura 206.
Okay. Or I like the comment, though.
That's an interesting comparison.
Yeah. That's a good comment.
Jim likes that, except for the Linda part of it.
Yeah.
But is there, in Maura's got on the show sheet here that CBS Sports ranked the Seahawks Patriots as the best Super Bowl ever. That, if you can remove the pain, which is really hard for me as a Seahawks fan, and just the utter shock and jarring nature of that outcome and how it ended, that was a pretty compelling game. I think if I weren't a Seahawks fan or a Patriots fan and just a football fan watching that, if I'm being objective, I think I'd be on the edge of my seat going, what a game, right?
Well, it was so interesting, too, because just in that last minute, didn't you wait for the Patriots to take a timeout at some point?
Well, yeah, that was
the
other.
And then they never did.
Yeah, where everybody's going, what is Belichick doing? What is he doing?
Well, he would have looked like an idiot if the Seahawks had scored.
Did he ever answer that question, by the way, what the strategy was there? Why he'd...
I don't know. I think we were just left to assume that he's such a genius.
Yeah,
it was going to work out that way.
Some kind of master plan behind it. But on the surface, you're going, what? Has he lost his mind?
So they rated, CBS Sports rated that number one out of all of them. I don't know if I'd put that
according
number
to
one.
Linda, that's what I've got.
Even
here.
If I were.
Well, let me ask you this. Because the other one that I would say is the David Tyree catch.
Or he beat the unbeaten Patriots.
Yeah, unbeaten Patriots. And
Eli getting out of that sack to begin with.
Well, whether he got out of it or not is the thing. I'm looking at this. I've been reading this book called Scorecasting, and it talks about how like umpires are very unlikely to call a fourth ball or a third strike because if it's just, you know, 0-2 or 3-0, whatever. So, you know, to me.
Really?
Yeah. That.
What's the reasoning on that?
Because they'd rather let the players decide, you know, I don't want to make a call. You go ahead, and it's called like omission bias, that you go ahead and make. And so with a walk, the strike zone gets a lot bigger if you're, you know,
that's interesting.
Got three balls, and if you have two strikes,
is that
the strike zone
nature,
gets a lot smaller. So it's just very interesting.
Is it human nature?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, it sounds like
I believe it is a little bit of human nature. Jim's talking about, when he talks about human nature, he's talking about how a bunch of grown men who are professionals and highly paid are going to go out on the field and just go, I don't know if this one really matters that much.
Or they'll go to another game and go, I'm going to really try tonight.
Yeah, I'm really trying now. Right. So, but yeah, but what happened on that play, and I think it was Mike Carey was the head official. He just let him play, like let it, because it looked, a lot of people, and I remember Tony Dungy saying, that was in the grasp. That was a sack, but yeah, he let it happen. So, but, you know, you look at that play, that catch by Tyree, who wasn't, he's like a special team guy.
Yeah.
What's a better play, that or the play that Malcolm Butler made? If you can objectively peel away your feelings, I thought, like, that defied physics. Like, he didn't even, like, you would, usually when you collide with somebody, you bounce off and the ball comes out of there. And he ran right through that thing. I thought that was the best play I'd seen in any Super Bowl.
That Tyree catch was pretty remarkable, though. And what was on the line and what it ultimately led to was a team that was undefeated being defeated.
Yeah.
It was so improbable. Eli getting out of it, and maybe he should have been ruled in the grass, all that. But him escaping to throw the ball and Tyree catching it against Rodney Harrison, the cheapest player I've ever seen. And it was just amazing that it's pinned against his helmet. I mean, that's, I don't know. The play by Butler is great, and it hurts, but it was a brilliant play. I'd have to go with the Tyree catch, though.
I'd go with the Tyree catch, too, and I think the 72 Dolphins would agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'm guessing they would.
I'm guessing they would.
But the reason I was talking about memory of these games and things like that, obviously we remember the Seahawks matchups in the Super Bowl. I remember the ending of that Titans-Rams game.
Oh my gosh.
If I recall,
it was right on the 1 yard line, wasn't it? Half yard line.
It was a brilliant end, but I don't think the first half was great. I don't think there was a great first half to that game. And as I just said, I don't have the most, you know, clear memory of every game that took place. But
is that the 2001 Super Bowl?
That was 99.
Or was it? Oh,
it was 99. Yeah. 99. St. Louis won 23-16, but Tennessee was going in for the tying score.
But did the first half kind of stink?
I can't remember.
Okay. I don't remember either. I just remember after that there was a really cool commercial for the NFL with Don Cheadle, and he was like laying down on the ground and he was like pointing to this is you know, like it was like a foot apart as far as, you know, and that's the thing. That thing came down to, you know, they just ran out of time. I mean, and he was just inches short. So yeah, you look at those three are all pretty cool. I know Jim really has a bias towards the overtime win by the New England Patriots.
Because he picked overtime in that game?
He picked overtime.
Yeah, what was is that the best Super Bowl in your mind?
No. Just to clarify, I'd written a story the year before that the Super Bowl was going to go to overtime, and then I rewrote that story again the next year. And if that game hadn't gone to overtime,
I
would have written it again.
It's like the Brady thing.
I would have kept it.
In fact, you'll be right.
I'm thinking about bringing it back for this Super Bowl because I was going to do some research tonight or tomorrow morning, or maybe I won't do it at all, and I'll just, you know, throw something out there. But the point spread's 1 or 1.5, and so that leads you to believe it's going to be a close game, right? I mean, if Las Vegas is right about it.
Could be,
so I think this game might go overtime.
What's the best Super Bowl?
Well, you know, it's weird to me. I'm just looking. I've got all the Super Bowls in front of me right now, and I can still remember the first one in 67. I mean, when you're 62, I was 9 years old when that game was played. I watched it on a black and white TV somewhere, and it was when.
What was the final score?
I have it in front of me, but I didn't remember it. But I knew that Green Bay had won. They beat Kansas City 35-10, and at that time, everybody was like, the AFL, they're not, and you finally had the merger, and it still was seen as the league that was a little beneath the NFL.
Yeah.
And so, and then Green Bay won again the next year against Oakland. And then, so one of the more memorable games, if you're old enough to remember this, and even if you're not, you know about the folklore and everything with Joe Namath and the New York Jets.
Super Bowl III.
And guaranteeing that they were going to win the Super Bowl, and they were 17-point underdogs or something like that, and they went out and beat the Colts 16-7. So, yeah, I mean, it goes back. I mean, there's so many blowout games. But
yeah, there was. I feel like I remember just a lot of uneven, like the Cowboys beating the daylights out of the Bills, I think. And
well, you know what I feel when you mention the
lopsided
Bills,
lopsided victories.
You mentioned the Bills. Don't you feel bad for them?
Yeah,
they
four in a row,
four consecutive years, and they were
wide right,
and they finished. You know, they were the runner-up, and they haven't been back since.
God, imagine getting to the Super Bowl four consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
4 years in a row you get to the Super Bowl. That is I know they didn't win, but that's...
The Bills are so good.
That's
at that
amazing.
Point. I think we played them two or three times during that stretch.
Oh.
Yeah, they were really good. So, but how about personally? I think the worst Super Bowl, and I saw somebody had this as the worst one, and I don't know if it was NFL Network or CBS or whatever, but it was the, was it 94, 95, but it was the Chargers and the 49ers. And I think it was 46-26 or something.
Yeah, you're pretty close, 49-26.
49-26.
At Joe Robbie Stadium in Miami.
I was at, my wife and I were, and another couple were at this killer party. And we had agreed to go to another person's house for the game. And we were at this, we were having so much fun, man. It was out in the desert and in, you know, Scottsdale area. And we're doing shots and there was a keg and everything. So then we end up going, and my wife was pregnant, so we had a designated driver. And so we go to the other place and we walk in and I'm like, hey, what do you got to drink? You want something to drink? The guy says, and I'm like, yeah, what do you got? He's like, we got seltzer water. We got we got soda. I'm like, yeah.
And?
Oh, I forgot. We have iced tea.
I can make you some orange juice.
There was nothing there.
No adult beverages.
No adult beverages. And I watched the most boring game.
Wasn't it Stan Humphries who was the San Diego quarterback? And
yes.
they were a huge underdog in that game.
Right.
Let's do a quick take two and you can...
Take two! All right. First up, sorry, Jim, I was going to play a highlight for you, but we're running short on time.
Oh, no, you have to play the highlight. Please. Please.
Doesn't care about the clock.
I do care about the clock. I know that's important.
Washington State took on Arizona State, okay, and CJ Elvey helped them to a 67-65 win with a last-minute buzzer beater last night.
18.0 seconds left. Arizona State does have one timeout. Graham's second free throw. Nearly banked it home. It's pulled down. He missed it. A bucket would win it for the Cougs. No timeouts left. 13 seconds left. Bonton, half court, drives left wing, 10 left. Feeds Elvey, 8 seconds left. Step back, 3, right wing for the lead. He hits it. Elvey hits it. 5 seconds left. House, half court, Arizona State throws the ball away. 0.5 left. Elvey with the game winner. 67-65. And this place has lost its lid.
See, wasn't that worth it?
It was amazing, Jim.
Did you watch it?
No.
Why?
Because I had other things to do. I didn't watch it.
It was a great game.
It
we beat
wonderful.
Bobby Hurley, Remy Martin, and the Sun Devils. It was fantastic.
Fantastic. How are they going to do in the tournament?
The Cougs? Which tournament?
The big one. The one that counts.
The CBI.
I'm hopeful for the CBI, yeah.
All right, we'll squeeze this in real quick. Big announcement this morning. XFL team president Ryan Gustafson was on with Danny Gallant to announce that they are partnering with us here at 710 ESPN. Jim Zorn will join John Clayton every Monday. Lydia Cruz will have a Wednesday evening Dragons Insider show and a weekly podcast. And I will be your Seattle Dragons Insider and sideline reporter.
So, yay, Maura.
Congratulations.
Get some big news. Some big news. Maura will be the sideline. I've been peppering her with questions because we don't know where the games are being broadcast. So you're on the sidelines. You're going to be talking to players.
We know. They're going to be on national TV every week, either ESPN, ABC, or Fox. But there isn't a full radio broadcast yet this year. So a lot of my coverage, I think, will be going out over social media. And you'll hear it on the station.
And everybody's walking around the building with Dragons gear. We got a Dragons helmet sitting in front of us for those of you on the video stream.
Awesome.
We got a Dragons hat. Did you buy that?
Oh,
you did?
Yeah.
That wasn't part of the...
Brian Schoening and his family?
Bought this months ago.
Oh, okay.
He's a season ticket holder.
They brought in Schwag. And Maura's got her, or Linda has her her Dragon shirt on. So
Linda.
Yeah, there's a lot going on around the building. So, all right. Good news. Good stuff there. Meanwhile, Shaquille Griffin had some interesting comments today about how he'd like his role on the Seahawks defense to change. We'll hear about those and talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and Maura on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Maura on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Maura.
It It is Bob and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I don't know where Dave went.
Yeah,
he went to go move his car. Maybe there might not be any parking spots out there.
Maybe he's got a ticket, and he'll have a good story to tell us when he gets back.
He could be circling the block right now angrily.
Yeah.
Going, parking out here stinks!
Yeah.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. I joke. John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock today. A reminder that our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. And then Joe Fan will be with us at 4:30 today. Shaquille Griffin had some interesting comments. And we'll talk to Joe Fan about this because he wrote a story about it on NBC Sports Northwest. And here's a little bit of the conversation, the audio portion, where Shaq wanting to do something a little different than he's done in the past in the way that he covers receivers out there.
I want to be faster and work on more man press techniques, you know, and be able to move around. One game I have to be more in the slot, one game, you know, maybe travel a little bit more. You know, it's so many things that I have some ideas that I would love to try out and do. But just working on just little things at a time. You know, I don't want to do too much to a point where it's overwhelming, but being better in man. You know, last year I want to work more on off man. Now I want to continue to get more consistent in press so I can stay on the line the whole time, you know. And working on my endurance. I want to be able to press a person all 4 quarters of a game to a point where he just can't take it anymore.
And then before we respond to that, one more here. Joe Fan asking Shaq if he plans on telling the team this, that he'd like to travel.
Have you pitched that yet? Because Seattle Corners, traditionally under Pete Carroll, don't travel.
Yeah.
Have we pitched this or is this breaking news here? Where's Ken Norton know
you know,
that, hey, I
want to follow some. This is something I've been talking to some of the coaches, but, you know, this is something that we'll I most likely definitely try to mention. But, you know, we just got to see how it goes. You know, it's going to be an incredible offseason. It's going to be so many different changes between, you know, me, between my brother, again, you know, different opportunities. And this defense is going to be so much better. And I'm just excited to see what we can really bring to the table. And I'm excited for others to see as well.
So he didn't really answer that question. But, Dave, this is a precursor. We got Question Man coming up in the next segment.
Oh, boy.
But this is kind of part of it. A, how do you – is that realistic to expect that – he could just all of a sudden do this, that he's, I guess, is he capable? Is he a guy you look at and go, yeah, I would let him do that? And B, how do you think the team responds to that? Would Norton look at him and go, dude, this is my defense. Don't tell me how to run my defense. Or how do you think the coaches would respond to that?
I think as a player, you make them aware that you're excited to do it. And it's like he's taking on a challenge. So I wouldn't see it as
he's kind of going against their game plan, right?
He's not trying. I wouldn't take it as he's trying to, you know, be a hero and make it about him. It's just about his confidence. But I would say just in general, they don't do a lot of different little variations like that. This is a defense that they've basically just lined up and let him play. And I have to say that, you know, you allow them to make plays that way. If you, and I talked to Keith Butler about this, who's the defensive coordinator for the Steelers. And the Steelers are always like in the top part of, you know, the, as far as sacks go. I mean, they get after it. But, you know, he was telling me about his linebacker there, Bush, the kid from Michigan.
Devin Bush?
Yeah, in the first round. He said, you know, I got to a point where I'm like, I have to stop filling his head with all of these checks and things, you know. There's a point where you get more out of a player by just letting him go out and play. And, you know, that's where I think the Seahawks have excelled in that. And I really like that theory that you get good players that are fast and that can react and you allow them to go play. And, you know, if you get those guys in, I always say there's three parts to, you know, playing defense. It's getting lined up properly, fulfilling your responsibility, and then the third part is be a player. Just go make plays. And they have allowed their guys to do that by not doing a whole bunch of complicated stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, and how many times have we seen it? I mean, honestly, I couldn't tell you how many times that Richard Sherman traveled with the receiver when he went in motion. I don't remember a lot of it, but they're just a team in general that doesn't do a lot different. I mean, when they were playing that really good defense, how many times did you see them blitz?
Yeah.
They were bringing four, dropping seven, and that's how they want to do it, and they want to keep it kind of simple.
Is he good enough? Is he a guy you would say, all right, whoever the best receiver, you're facing Julio Jones, that's your guy. Davante Adams this week, that's your guy, Shaq. Yeah. The ace, the best on the other team.
Sherman did it against Julio Jones one game here in Seattle.
Yeah, but you're isolating a moment where you're talking about, yeah, typically wasn't what they asked him to do. So, yeah.
Well, and the other thing is you're giving away that it's man, right? I mean, unless you want to play some kind of like a, almost like a box in one type of deal.
Meaning everybody else is in his zone, but he's man? Or
have, well, no, just you're giving away that you're playing man-man coverage. And there's a lot of disguise that happens before. But, I mean, if you see him follow the guy to the other side of the formation, it's man-to-man coverage.
So you're basically thinking, Dave, that this is all well and good, what Shaquille Griffin is offering to do, but
sure,
that it likely won't happen. Well, see, because I was just sitting there thinking, well, okay, sounds great. Go ahead and cover the best receiver, but then, okay, what are you going to do with Trey Flowers? Is he going to shift over? Are you going to have Akeem King? Will it be a rookie? Will it be someone else at Shaquille's position on the left side?
It's funny. As I looked at the Cincinnati game, the very first one, there was three or four times where Trey was lined up on the other side. You know, so they have done some of that, but he was lined up, you know, man-to-man. I don't know if they were playing a zone or what, but, you know, he was over there on alignment. I don't know what would have happened if they'd have gone in motion, if they'd switched sides or whatever, but because, you know, if they go in motion and it's zone, you don't really adjust that much. I mean, you take a step maybe one way or the other, but, and the reason why I'm saying, you know, you give it away that you're in man coverage. If you go in motion and the guy follows him, yeah, pretty much, like I said, unless you're, you know, playing some other kind of zone underneath it and you're just manning that guy, which I don't see a lot of that. But, you know, it'd be nice to have that. It'd be nice to have that guy. I just don't think they thought they had that guy this year.
But if he's – so it puts everybody else in man-to-man coverage, right? He's following this guy. So that means you've got to have – you may have that trust in Shaquille to shut down or slow down their top receiver, but do you have the trust in the rest of that secondary – to play in man coverage?
Yeah, but they play man all the time. I mean, they didn't play it as much this year, but
right.
Yeah, they're
some of that's about trust,
coverage,
right?
As far as knowing that he can lock that guy up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you think, and it's about confidence. And, you know, playing corner is, and I think Joe Fan will talk about this a little bit, but you really do have to be kind of a loudmouth and kind of cocky. And, you know, I thought that's where Sherman, and I felt like how he operated was that he would go out and say what he was going to do because it kind of forced him in his own mind to go out and do it. So you have to have that kind of cockiness, and I don't think Shaquille did, and especially last year after coming off that year where he thought he had a D-plus as far as his grade goes. I don't know if he graded himself this year, but he feels good about himself. I got no problem with that. We know that he's not a disruptive guy. We know he's a team guy, and so he's doing it with the best of intentions, mm-hmm. and he wants to challenge himself. So I think it's great news, whether they do it or not, and how much they do it, that's the question.
All right, coming up, as I said, it's been a while since we've had a Question Madden segment, so I've got a few ready to go. And
wait, that wasn't it?
That wasn't it. I've got another question, and it's written here, Dave. These aren't my words. These are Linda's words. I'll ask Dave.
Linda wants Question Man.
I'll ask Dave about,
and third person,
about
Linda.
Single high safety next with Bob Dave and Moore.
Dave doesn't like it, Bob.
710 ESPN Seattle.
Whether you've got an answer or not, Bob has a question. And another question. And another question.
Bob has lots of questions.
Bob demands answers.
You're going to have to do better than that.
Bob Skelton is the Question Man.
You're Question Man.
That's exactly right. I am Question Man.
So, Bob, what questions do you have for us today?
I don't know, Bobby.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more. And before I get to my questions, Dave, there's a great text here meant to poke at you.
I don't know if that's true.
From the 570. I'm not sure where that area code is, but the 570 says, Dave, if the defense is in single high safety and the strong side corner is traveling, who does the high safety guard? They covered all of your buttons in that one text. Is there an answer to that?
You know what? They're from Scranton.
Is that where that's
What's
from?
The name of the paper company there? Dunder Mifflin?
Oh, Dunder Mifflin, yeah.
Probably works at Dunder Mifflin. It's probably Dwight.
Dwight Schrute?
Start calling 570 Dwight.
Dwight Schrute.
I like the one from the 808, too. Did you see that, Dave? I just praised my dog for guarding the house while I was gone. He replied, guarding? No, I was in coverage.
That's awesome.
No, the dog would be guarding the house.
Oh, man. Hey, all right. Well, this isn't really anything on the field. And we've actually sort of talked about this before, but I retweeted a story. Last night from Brock and Salk's podcast. I don't know if you're aware they have a podcast.
What?
Yeah, it's weird.
I listened to it today.
Did you?
I did.
Those guys should advertise it, man. Let people know it's out there. But it, it was concerning the comments from Russell Wilson, and we touched on this a bit, and we'll ask Joe Fan about it. But there was a quote from Brock Heward basically saying, we've never heard anything like this from Russell Wilson in 8 years. And Danny O'Neill wrote a story about, you know, oh, this is not good, and Russell's got to stay in his lane. And it was the comment where he was asked about, hey, what does the team need to do? And he gave a very just general, innocuous, yeah, you got to get players on defense. We could use some offense. You got the draft. You got free agency. John and Pete are great at it. I mean, it was such a throwaway. And for whatever reason, it's caught fire. It's a story. It's a, oh, man, Russell, did you hear that?
Yeah, but for him, it was more than usual.
It was it?
I thought so.
He said nothing.
He didn't say anything.
He stated the obvious.
Well, I just remember when I saw it for the very first time, I thought, oh, I got to bring this up about because it'll be something that we'll want to talk about. Because I thought it was just a little bit out of character for him.
The
superstars part of it.
The superstars part of it.
Yeah, where he said that the team needed some superstars in so many words.
Here's the cut for those that missed what we're talking about. And again, Danny O'Neill wrote a story about it at 710sports.com, and then there's the Brock and Salk podcast about it. Here's the original comment.
Are you confident, Russell, that the pieces are in place on this team to take the next step?
I think we need a couple more. I think Jadeveon's a big-time guy that we would love to get back on our football team. He was so good in the locker room. He brought so many, you know, just havoc plays to the field. Hopefully we can get a few other players there on defense. And then also on offense, we have a great offense, but I think we can always add more pieces. And I think that's going to be the part that's going to be great with John Schneider and Pete as well in terms of this offseason's free agency. Free agency is very, very key. To get superstars on your team and try to get great players that can fill the space. And then the draft. We always do a great job in the draft, and that's going to be really important to get some young stars up and coming.
I'm missing it, man. I know he said the word superstar. This was so innocuous and just general and vague that it blew right by me. We played it, talked about it. I'm like, yeah, okay. And then I'm seeing these stories being written. And Dave, you were kind of on board with that, not to the level that Danny seems to be, but kind of, hey, Russell shouldn't be taught. Players should just play. And I guess I would feel differently if he came out and said, you know what, our cornerbacks, we need a cornerback. Or it really got specific about, man, our O-line is struggling. I need protection. That's different. This was just kind of wide strokes, painting. Yeah, some here, some there, sprinkle in here. Yeah, we'll be great. They do a great job. What am I missing here?
Well, from my perspective, what sort of sums it up was, I mean, Cortez Kennedy used to say, players play, coaches coach, owners own. I mean, stay in your lane, and you know. And I just have always said, don't ever ask the players what they think.
But they did, and he's the face.
Well,
he's
I'm not talking about the media people. I'm just talking about if you're a GM or a coach, you don't really care what the players think. I mean, they're doing their job. You do your job, and so yeah. But I don't with Russell. Yeah, I'm not sure, Bob, why that sort of caught fire this year. Maybe it was something about the way he said it. Maybe it was the words that he used. But I don't have any problem with Russell. I mean, and look, also, you know, he has so much equity built up with me that I'm never going to think that he is a selfish guy or anything, even if he screwed up and said one thing wrong. And that kind of is something that goes around in our society now. Somebody, you know, that you know is a good person, they say one thing wrong and everybody jumps on him and attacks him on Twitter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like if you have that much equity built up of knowing that Russ is a good guy, he means the best, there's just no way he could ever reverse it for me. By just making some, as you said, sort of fairly innocuous. I mean, the other thing, too, is he's a quarterback. You know, I mean, I would probably make more fun if it was, you know, Jaron Reed saying that or something, you know. I'd be like, yeah
Jaron, why don't you step up your own game before you start popping off?
Well, here's the other thing that I would say is that I like to say this a lot when people come up with things like that. Yeah, they already thought of that.
That's the other part, though.
I think John and Pete already thought of that.
I picture John and Pete listening to that, somebody saying, hey, Pete, John, come here. Did you hear what Russell said? And they play that for him, and they look at the guy going, I don't understand why you're playing that. What did he say?
It's the superstars part, though, and I think part of it is that's the typical fan, me. A lot of people are thinking, yeah, this team doesn't need any more of
this stood out to you when you heard it.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Really?
And I, yeah, I liked what he had to say because I think it's in keeping of, with what people are thinking.
Well,
that,
no, I
agree
with
they need some
what
superstars. And like, I as soon as I say that, though, I know Dave's going to say something like, well, what, they're just supposed to go to the superstar tree?
Tree in John yeah, Schneider's backyard.
It's in John's yard.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree.
That might be in his front yard.
I thought he was accurate. Yeah, they need defensive help. You need help on the offense. You got to draft well. Hey, get some free agents. That's all just general.
But he usually says nothing.
That is nothing.
It's more than nothing.
It wasn't. It was nothing. He was only specific about one thing, and that was Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, it's more than what you would usually hear from him.
To me, it sounded exactly the way he always talks. It sounded you could just blend that in with any other post game soundbite about everybody's great and
okay.
Our O line's great, and it just for me it was very Russell. It didn't even register with me, and then I'm seeing the articles, and I'm like, what am I missing? What?
Well, and quarterbacks are kind of like management anyway. So 208, you should know better than this. Boise asking me is some scenario where I wouldn't be offended by the team's single high safety. I don't get offended.
He gets offended.
Annoyed. People who get offended are weak. I don't get offended. Anyway,
it's interesting. I
think it's a good question you asked, Bob, because it did get kind of blown out of proportion. You know, maybe you'd say, well, we're in a slow period. Just in general, though, yeah, I don't want to really hear from the players and what they think that they need. Russell, okay, it's fine. And again, you know, if you said a player said this, I would say, yeah, that's dumb. Just stay in your lane, play. But it's Russell. And again, like I said, I think there needs to be more of this. I don't know.
In our
society or whatever, there needs to be more of this. That, like, if this guy has built up that much equity with you that, you know, and I keep using that word, but I guess what else is there? I mean, you know the kind of dude that he is. Russ is the best quarterback that you could possibly have for, you know, wanting to win and being a team guy mm-hmm. and everything. So there's no way that him saying that and using the word superstar is ever going to make me think any differently of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I guess I just heard it, and I wouldn't – you're right about the equity, and the, I mean, you know who he is. I don't look at him having to tap into that equity to sort of account for a comment he made because there was nothing wrong with the comment he made. It was a throwaway. It was a nothing. It was like, yeah, stating the obvious. It's what he does. States the obvious. That's sorry. I guess I'm not seeing what Danny is seeing and what Brock is seeing or what you're seeing, Jim. I'm a little lost on this one, I guess.
That's okay.
Dame's the 360. Dave seems offended by the question about being offended.
All right, 360. Well done. Well done.
All right, come on up. Oh, goodness. The professor is joining us live from Miami for the latest on the lead up to the Super Bowl. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.